Thank you very much for the introduction, Guy. Let me plug this again. This is from a project that finished about 2 years ago, and I had 1,000 of them printed to give out at talks that I was going to give, and then there was a pandemic. So please take one, take two. Give them to your friends. But I'm not here today to talk about that project. I'm here to talk about a different project, the one you see here, which is about protest songs and protest music. Now, when I asked Brian if I could come and talk about this project, because my university likes it if I come and talk to professionals about my research, he eventually said, yes, you can come. I'm going to give you the pre-lunch uplift slot. That's what this is. Did you know that? Pre-lunch uplift slot. Now, I'm very used to giving lectures before lunch, but I'm not used to having anyone leave them feeling uplifted. So this is hard for me, but hopefully we can go on a journey at the end of which you will feel uplifted. Now the second thing Brian said was, can you get everybody at the end singing? Now I don't sing, so it's very difficult for me, but we are going to go on a journey that ends in us singing. So you need to be with me, because otherwise I'm going to be at the front singing out of tune on my own. But in about 15 minutes time we're going to sing a song that you don't know the words to yet, and you haven't heard the tune. But we can do that, yes?
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you so much. So the project is called Our Subversive Voice, and it is about the history of the protest song. In fact, it's about 400 years of English protest songs. Why English protest songs? Because generally when you ask people to name a protest song, they start by naming American protest songs, because they're very famous. And then if you say, well, what about from here? Then they name Scottish, Irish and Welsh protest songs that are complaining about the English. So we thought, well, what would it look like if we investigated English protest songs? And what would it look like if we looked at them in a long period of time? Because everyone thinks that protest songs began in about 1958, when guys with beards like mine got acoustic guitars and began complaining about things again. But actually, there's a much, much longer history of political song, and we wanted to find out what it would look like if we studied that longer period. We wanted to know what makes them happen. Why are there sometimes lots and sometimes none? What supports or encourages or discourages people from producing these songs? And above all, which is why I'm on the project with my colleagues who are all historians and musicians, we wanted to know, how do they communicate ideas? How are they persuasive, particularly politically persuasive? So the main part of our project at the moment is this website. If you want to go and find out more, you can go and look at oursubversivevoice.com. We've got 750 songs on this website, and we try and explain something about them, explain how they work and where they're from. One of the great things about the site is if you go on, you get a random selection each time you go on the website of different songs. So here are some about people complaining about conditions for rural life. There's one here about the Falklands War in 1982. You go on again and you get different songs. You get a classical piece of classical music about war, Child of Our Time. You get Stand Down Margaret. It's a ska song calling for Margaret Thatcher to resign in 1980. So you can go on and find all these different kinds of songs. And you can also read little essays by us. There's one by me, Does It Work? Politics, Rhetoric and the Protest Song. So people can come along and study and learn about protest songs and think about how they work. But what I found during the project was I came in and I thought, well, I'm going to come in and I'm going to treat these songs as if they were speeches. And that way I'll understand them and make sense of them. And what's happened over the last year is I've ended up thinking, no, actually songs aren't really like speeches, but speeches are often quite like songs. Yeah. And maybe if we thought of them as songs, that might help us understand them and perhaps in your case write them in a new or different ways or find ways to inspire yourself in what you're doing. Why are they like speeches? Well, why are speeches like songs? Well, they both do the same kind of thing. They inform, educate, and entertain. This is a famous phrase in this country, first used by the first director of the BBC. He said the service was there to inform, educate, and entertain. The songs use words to paint vivid pictures like your speeches do, to tell people about something that's happening. And in the early part of the earliest period we're looking at, in the 17th century, they were a main source of news for people. The songs that they heard, played the songs that the sheets were passed out, told them what was happening in different parts of the country, told them what the king was doing or not doing. But they also present arguments. They do give arguments. They try emotionally and rationally get people to think about situations in certain ways and derive conclusions. But most importantly, because they are songs, they use rhythm and repetition, just like your speeches do, to invite people to respond and to join in. We've just been hearing about how audiences are taken on the journey, and we know a speech is going well because the audience is, in a sense, singing along. You hear Martin Luther King's speech recorded, you hear the audience say yes, responding to it, you hear Obama in New Hampshire, yes we can, that refrain coming back in various ways. Just as when we listen to songs and perhaps silently sing along in our heads, what we want our audiences to do when we're giving speeches is be silently following along in their heads, anticipating that that three-part list is going to reach its crescendo, those contrasts are going to repeat. So they're singing along in the song, in the speech with you. So let me just give you some examples of the songs that we've got in our list and the ways in which they work rhetorically. So this one is from a long time ago, 1653. So at this point in English history, we've got rid of one king, we've cut his head off, and we haven't got a monarchy for a short period of time. We bottled out a few years later and got a king back again. We found one from Holland eventually to come, much like the speechwriters' delegations here. So at this point, the parliament is in charge, but people are not very happy with the parliament. And this song became very famous. People marched and sang this song. The publisher got arrested for this song, complaining about the parliament. So it's in old language. Full 12 years and more, these rooks they have sat. I like this image of the rooks, these kind of black birds, cunning birds, crouching over, sitting in the parliament, to gull and to cozen. These are old-fashioned words for cheat and con. So for full 12 years and more, these rooks they have sat to gull and cozen all true-hearted people. Our gold and our silver has made them so fat that they look more big and mighty than St. Paul's steeple, the big dome of the big church in London. So that's a very old song, that's 350 years old. Who could imagine a parliament sitting for 12 years getting fat at our expense today? Anyway, I shouldn't do politics, should I? So vivid imagery there to kind of conjure up a picture, these rooks in the parliament. But we also find a lot of songs, particularly in the 19th century, using primarily emotion, describing things in ways that get people's sentiments going. This is the 19th century, people are reading Charles Dickens and crying about the images they see there. But also picking particular examples, using an individual figure to exemplify the issue they want to raise. So this one became, this was a poem first, and then became a very popular song. It's all about this woman in the picture here, having to work away all day, mending clothes. At this point, they actually had to pay a deposit to the textile manufacturers to get the clothes that they would then fix and get paid, and they were constantly caught, like indentured labour today, in this endless cycle of poverty. So the song paints this picture of her, weary and worn, crying and lost, and this became immediately picked up, became quite a powerful song for movements advocating for reform, for labour rights and protection for people of all kinds. So again, telling a story, using a single case to engage our emotions, but with that song, catching people and involving them in thinking about the situation and what should be done about it. This is a very famous song in this country. I don't know if this is famous, everyone knows this song, Free Nelson Mandela. It says this is 1984, of course advocating for the freedom of the symbol of the anti-apartheid struggle in South Africa. And this is an interesting one because this is also actually a very uplifting song. It's not a sad song, it's a joyous song, encouraging people to feel positive and celebrate the possibility of change and improvement. And the thing about this extract from this song that I think is most important, and why I say metonymy as well as rhetorical question, is this little line in the middle here, this image, shoes too small to fit his feet. Mm-hmm. Just in the middle of this, there's this darker line here. And it's a very powerful image because you suddenly get this sense of a person, something very specific going on. But also, of course, it's quite a powerful image because the constraint of the shoes mirrors the constraint of being imprisoned, mirrors the constraint of the people for whom Mandela stands. And then it asks you that question, are you so blind you cannot see? And of course we know the answer. And at that point, we're singing along. It's not just the singer saying to us, Free Nelson Mandela, we're all there singing it along. We've become the speakers of the speech as well as the audience, and we've become convinced by it. This is a bit more of a subtler one, but I think this is worth thinking about from the point of view of speeches. So my fancy academic terms here, genus species, this is about, as we were talking a moment ago, how does a speech engage the universal and the particular? How does it connect a very specific thing that we might feel connected to some larger issue? Or how does it show us that some larger issue that seems far away from us is something very closely connected to us? So you may or may not agree with the politics of this one, but I think the way this singer, Maggie Holland, does this is very artful. She wrote this in 1991, I guess it must have been, during the first Gulf War. So Iraq has invaded Kuwait, and then there's quite a brutal air war going on. It's a very destructive war, in part, for lots of reasons, but partly it's over control and access to the key resources of oil. So what Maggie does is describe herself driving, listening to the radio, and hearing this news about the war, the Scuds and Patriot missiles that are all going and destroying all these things. So that's what she's hearing on the news. So she pulls over in a petrol station to fill up her car. And as she's filling up the petrol station, the fumes of the petrol, and she suddenly finds herself thinking, well, hang on a minute, this is connected. The story she tells is she realises that in some way in this ordinary town, filling up her car, doing this routine thing, in a way she's connected to this huge geopolitical world event that's happening. She feels bad about it. She feels the petrol is like blood on her hands. Beautiful way, I think, powerful way, to connect an ordinary everyday experience to a complex, vast political issue and raise the moral questions of what do we do? How are we implicated in these questions? And maybe that has some relevance to issues today. Now, I thought, given it's the pre-lunch uplift slot, I should give you a song about militant vegetarianism. I'm not vegetarian myself, but maybe we would be if we listened to this song more often. So this exemplifies what's called paradiastole, or redescription. Central kind of argument, particularly in politics, is to try and redescribe a situation or something someone is doing so it moves from being something we think of as being good to something we think as being bad. So when the finance minister or the chancellor announces they're going to spend lots of money, they say this is great investment, this is carefully planned growth. The opposition is going to say, no, you're splurging money everywhere, you're profligate, you shouldn't be doing this. Or the other way around. If the chancellor or the finance minister says, no, we're going to be careful and fiscally responsible, the opposition says, that's not fiscally responsible, that's mean, miserly. And often political dispute turns on that. And this song by the Smiths from 1985 is all about that. The whole thing is trying to convince you, this is great for before lunch, as I say, that actually, no, what you think is a normal thing, slaughtering the animals for food, this is just murder. And that's what it does. It repeats that refrain over and over, gives you various reasons to think of this thing that you've been thinking in one way as belonging to a different category of things. And lots of people say that was where they first began thinking of vegetarianism. It was quite a successful song in that respect. Now, we come into the bit where we're going to have to sing. So this song is by a very famous in this country protest singer songwriter called Billy Bragg. We interviewed him for our project, and you can hear an interview with him on the website. And it's called There Is Power in the Union. Let me just, if I can, play this. You should be able to hear the intro and then part of the song. Listen to the tune very carefully, because you might have to sing to this tune in a moment. Got the tune? It's quite simple. Now here comes the chorus. So, you heard the song, right? You enjoyed the song. So, mindful of my audience, as we all know we should be, and I thought, here I am trying to convince an audience of people who are mostly not English to sing a song about the trade union movement. I have no idea what your politics are. I thought, the only thing I can do is rewrite it. There is power in oratory, power in the tongue, power from the pen, of the writer. So, power in our network. So this is what we're going to try and do, okay? How do we feel about that? Brian is very happy. He has a hymn now. You can sing. So, you're going to have to all stand up. Oh. Excellent. Thank you. So should we try? We'll try it once without music, and then I'll give you the music. Okay. But first of all, just give me a. Give me a. I have no musical talent at all. Just give me a. Wow. You're going to be great. This is amazing. Okay. Get ready to feel uplifted. Yeah. We'll go through it, and then we'll put the music on, and we'll sing on the music. Okay. So I'm going to count you in. Okay, well, I'll go 1, 2, 3, it goes, there is power in oratory, power, ready? Tongue, power from the pen of the writer, louder, but it all amounts to nothing, together we don't stand. There is power in a network, the network forever defending our rights. Down with dull speeches, all writers unite, for the brothers and our sisters from many far-off lands. There is power in our network. Oh, yes! That was fantastic. So we'll try with the music. Now, the music here is slightly different from what you heard, because Billy Bragg took the tune. Maybe some of our American friends know this. Oops, it started already. It's an American tune called Power of Freedom. It was a Union song. Hang on. Now my technology is ruining things for me. Okay. So it'll count us in a little bit, and then we'll sing along to the martial music. And remember, some of you got it, yeah? It's not just there is power, it's there is power in a network. So fists up, but also your hands on hearts for the rest of you. Okay. I'll tell you when to start. Whoops. No. Why is it not doing it, Guy?
Should we have a look? We'll go here.
There we go. Okay, don't start yet. Coming up. Right, ready? There's power in oratory, power in the tongue, power from the pen of the writer, but it all amounts to nothing if together we don't stand. There is power in a network, the network forever defending our rights. Down speeches, all writers unite, with our brothers and our sisters from many far-off lands. There is power in our network. Yay, give yourself a round of applause. Okay. So thank you very much. Tell me about protest songs you know from your country, and feel uplifted when you go and have your vegetarian lunch.